If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good afternoon. For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. The public is overwhelmingly against a Republican threat to shut down the government in an effort to defund President Obama's signature health care law. That, according to a new CNBC poll released today. The survey shows that the public is against the effort to defund Obamacare in general, with 44% saying they oppose it compared to 38% who say they are in favor. Opposition spikes, however, when the defunding effort is tied to a government shutdown, with 59% saying they oppose the effort against 19% who say they're in favor. A new analysis of Census Bureau income and poverty statistics shows that the gap in male and female poverty widened last year. The report found that 16.3% of females and 13.6% of males were living in poverty. The gender poverty gap reached a historic low in 2010 when 16.2% of females and 14% of males lived in poverty. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at www.tn4action.com. That's www.tn4action.com. The phone number to call and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. I want to thank our listeners for being with us tonight. We have some great guests lined up tonight. We have Bobby Betray from Tennessee Eagle Forum. We're going to have David Fowler from Family Action Council of Tennessee, Matt Bonner from the Crescent Project, and Rose Shepherd from Silent Soldier Ruck March. Before we get to our first guest, there's a couple events coming up that I just want to mention to you that you might not be aware of. On the 3rd of October at 6 p.m. in the East-West Building at Lebanon Fairgrounds, Lebanon, Tennessee, the first annual Freedom Pack Dinner with Steve Gill, political analyst from WKRN Channel 2. They're going to honor two super conservatives from our state, Andy Miller, the founder and chairman of Tennessee Freedom Coalition, and John Harris, founder and president of Tennessee Firearms Association. So that's a good event. Tickets are $50 per person. Table sponsorships, $300. Business sponsorships, $500. Purchase tickets at 615-754-4632. So put that one on your calendar. And then on the 29th of September, the Sunday at 6:30, at the Cross Creek Baptist Church, 882 Red Top Road in Indian Mound, Tennessee, we're going to have a presentation from Islam to Christianity, Experience the Power of God's Movement Among Muslims Today. Matt Bonner is the head of the Crescent Project, and he's going to have some what are considered apostates from Islam who became Christians and talk about their struggles. And, of course, we're going to have on October 5th at the Embassy Suites in Cool Springs on Eagle's Wings Conference, sponsored by the Tennessee Eagle Forum, Bobby Betray, president. And we have Bobby on the line with us. How are you doing today, Bobby?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me on again.
You got a great lineup there. We talked about that last week, and I'm sure you'll fill us in a little bit on that before we go. I think we talked last week, and you said you've been up there as a lobbyist for about 26 years now.
Yes. This when this session adjourned in April, I completed my 26th year down there. There are only four legislators now that have been down there longer than I have. So I think in 26 years, that's a pretty good turnover out of 130 legislators.
You know where all the skeletons are buried, pretty much, I would imagine by now.
Well, I keep telling them they're just going to have to put up with me because I'm just going to still be there.
Well, we're glad you are. Now, you've probably learned a few things over the years, and I mean, you're effective, and you're definitely involved. What are some of the things that you like to pass on to people that maybe haven't been up there as much or would like to get involved but not sure what to do? What are some of the ins and outs of being effective at the Capitol?
Well, a lot of it, oddly enough, is just doing what your mama told you to do, and that was be nice and be polite and respectful. And that really is. It really goes a long way. And people, you know, kind of wonder, well, what is lobbying? Some of your radio listeners may not understand that. Lobbying is really the art of persuasion. And I love a quote from Bill Gothard. When he talked about persuasion, he said, guiding your virtual truths around their mental roadblocks. And so I think that is what lobbying is about. Part of it is being able to articulate why you support something and to support that with some information so that you can leave something with the legislator. But a lot of this is just really getting to know the legislators. And one of the things that I've done for many years is to get to know them. And part of it is, having been around so long, don't snicker there.
But you started right out of high school. You're not that old. You started right out of high school, right?
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's right. I was still wet behind the ears. No, I will tell you a little sidebar. When I went down there, I'd never done anything like this before. I had been a legislative aide in the Kentucky General Assembly for two sessions prior to moving to Tennessee. And so that experience became my Civics 101 class. I worked with a lovely state representative up there who was a great Christian man. He was kind of a lay preacher. And this was many years ago. You have to stop and think about it. And he ran from an inner city area in Louisville. And at that point, you had to run as a Democrat. And there was nobody more conservative than this guy. And so I worked with him on a lot of projects, and I would keep calling him and say, you know, Tom, I need this. We need to look at this. Need this information. He finally said, why don't I just appoint you my legislative aide, and then you can get whatever you want from anybody you want it. So he did, and I had this nice little badgy thing made up that said, you know, legislative aide to the representative, and that way, anytime I needed information, I could just call. And I actually spent every day over there. They meet every other year, and they meet 5 days a week. So it's like, oh my goodness, it is overwhelming. And that's when I started learning to evaluate legislation. I was in a meeting with some of the guys, and actually a prayer meeting, and somebody said, you know, we need to have somebody evaluate this legislation from the pro-family, pro-life perspective. And as I was driving home that day, it was one of those things where you hear this voice and then you wonder where the voice came from, because it surely didn't come out of your head. Because I thought, I can do that. And then I thought, where did that come from? And so I started doing that every weekend. I would evaluate the legislation. I would write up a paper on it, and I would put it on the legislator's desk that were interested in it every Monday morning. And that really taught me so much and prepared me for coming here. And when I started down the legislature in early 1987, I mean, I didn't know a senator from a janitor. And I thankfully had learned a little bit about the legislative process, although it's very different in Tennessee than it is in Kentucky, but there's some similarities. And so it's funny how God will take the things that, as he moves you into a new area and in a new journey, that the things that he has, the places and the experiences he's given you prior to that, will prepare you for doing something new that you had no anticipation of doing. So that really helped me. But, you know, getting to know the people before they run is one of the best things that you can do. And, in fact, getting the right people elected is the best part of lobbying, and the most important part of lobbying. Because believe me, when you walk into an office and you sit down in front of that desk and you have that legislator look at you and say, what can I do to help you? I mean, that's very different from them sitting there in that desk with their arms crossed across their chest and wanting to, you know, kind of, okay, you know, show me what you've got, convince me that you're right kind of attitude. So really, the election cycle, that's if you want to be a good lobbyist, that's a very good place to start, is to work in campaigns and get to know these people and get the right people elected. So
it makes your life a lot easier as a lobbyist if you have the right
people.
Well,
that's what I tell everybody. Get these right people elected. Make my job easier. So that's really one of the best things you can do. The last time I looked, there were around 500 registered lobbyists down at the state capitol. You stop and think about that for 132 legislators. Now, that doesn't mean that all 500 of them are down there, on a day-in and day-out basis, although if you've been down there during the session, there's some days that you think...
It looks like it.
Half of Nashville is inside that plaza.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the 500 lobbyists. How many of them, just so people out there have an idea and maybe will be more encouraged to come up there during session, out of those 500, how many of them are conservative?
Let's see. There's David Fowler and me and the Right to Life. And there's a new CWA chapter here, and I don't know if she'll be down there on a regular basis or not. I would classify NFIB as fairly conservative, although that's a business group, the National Independent Business People. That's about it.
Wow. That's why it's so important that the average person be informed and be involved. And until we can get more full-time lobbyists up there with a conservative bent, then the citizens, when they're able, when their job allows them, they need to be up there, but they need to educate themselves before they come. I've got to take real quick reading break, soon as I finish that, I'll come back to that. Our friendly local Republican spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? Get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and Hangar Flying Radio, on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central on Conservative Nation Radio, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Bobby Petrae from Tennessee Eagle Forum about effective lobbying in Nashville. Bobby, before the break, we were talking about your conservatives are definitely outnumbered as far as lobbyists go in Nashville, and the need for citizens when they can go up there. But, of course, going up there uneducated and not in the right frame of mind could possibly do more damage than good.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, I have seen that happen. And just as another sidebar, if you can't go there, if your listeners will sign up to get our emails, they can lobby from their computer. Because during the legislative session, I mean, we put out stuff during the week all year round, but during the legislative session, a legislative update goes out every Saturday morning, and it tells you the bills that are moving, the committees that they're in, what has happened to the bill, who voted for it, who didn't, and they have all the information that they need with just a click of their mouse to be able to influence their legislators, and that's very, very important. But back to what you were saying, in-person lobbying, that's why I really started out. I wasn't being amusing, but it is really important. Is to use good manners and be respectful, because I would say 75% of lobbying is building relationships, both with the legislators and with their staff. And because if you don't get to know somebody, you're not going to build a trust relationship. And that's one of the things that I have worked extraordinarily hard to do down there. And it's really interesting now when I'm with a group of legislators. I know just after the last primary before the general election, I think it was, I was at a meeting where there were some good friend legislators and there were some freshmen there. And this has happened frequently over the years. One of the longer-serving legislators put his arm around my shoulders and introduced me to the freshman, and he said something to the effect, "This is Bobby Petrae. She's president of Tennessee Eagle Forum, and you can trust her. You can trust her." And so those are the kind of things that really build those relationships. I describe myself as a hardwired type A personality on steroids, in that I am very task-oriented. But I had to learn to be more people-oriented and to remember that, you know, when you're, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, they're people first. They have families. They have bills to pay. And believe me, they're not getting rich being a legislator. And this so-called part-time job on a part-time pay is a full-time job on part-time pay. And it's, and they, you know, they have babies and they have sick parents and they have problem teenagers and they have all the same kind of life experiences that all the rest of us have. And so it's important to get to know them as people. And if you can't make them like you, you can certainly earn their respect. And that's what I've tried to do. And a part of that is demonstrating integrity and building trust. And that becomes your reputation. And that, again, is something you can't buy. I know in the early years when I was down there, I was walking down the hall past a senator's office. And just before I got to the door, another lobbyist came out and went in the opposite direction I was going. And about the time he came out, I got about even with the door and heard the senator's assistant say to somebody else in the office, call the guy's name and says, you know, you can't ever believe a word he says. And I thought, oh, my goodness, what a terrible reputation to have down there. Because, if you can't be trusted, what do you have to offer?
Yeah, well, they've got to be able to trust you, and you're not going to be able to keep it a secret. I mean, I'm sure there's not too many secrets up there.
Oh, my goodness, no. That's like a small town where everybody knows everybody else's business. That is for sure. But, you know, getting to know the staff is so important because many of them are gatekeepers.
Oh yeah, if you treat them, if you don't treat them right, you're not going to get anywhere. It's just they may only be a secretary, but like you say, they're the gatekeepers. And you do the wrong thing, say the wrong thing, it's not going to be good for you. You might still get to see the guy, but he's probably going to see you and have a little bias against you if you treated his staff bad.
I know one time there was this one secretary down there that I was just really having a difficult time connecting with. And I walked in the office one day, and the intern was in there, and the intern was adopting a puppy, and the puppy was in a box over in the corner of the room, and somebody had brought it that morning, and she was going to take it home with her that afternoon. And turned out that this secretary was showing me the puppy, and she was a real dog lover. And so I took a picture of my little 3-pound Yorkie the next time I went in there to show it to her, and I will tell you, it changed the whole tenor of our relationship. After that, we had a very, very pleasant relationship. And, you know, when her husband died sometime after that, you know, I got to send her a card and I prayed with her when she lost her husband. And so you never know what little thing like that. And one of the things to remember is that you're seeking somebody's favor, and so you are appealing to authority. And that means you don't go in making demands and you don't go in making threats to these people. And my personal philosophy has been, if I can't make a friend, I won't make an enemy. And so regardless of whether sometimes we wonder about it, number one, these people were elected by their constituents to represent them. And so the office deserves the respect, even if we sometimes have our doubts about the person holding it.
About the person, yeah. And about the people that elected him, but that was their choice.
He's an elected person. We live in a constitutional republic, and they were duly elected, and so they deserve the respect. Yeah. And I do pray a lot about the work I do.
Yeah, I've got to take another quick break, and we'll be right
all
back.
Right.
Don't go away. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. We'll be back with Bobby Betray in just a minute.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Bobby Petrae, president of the Tennessee Eagle Forum, and we're talking about effective lobbying in Nashville. Since you've been up there a while, let me ask you, you know, the last 4 or 5 years since the Tea Parties have came around, what have you seen change up there, good, bad, and ugly, about that? As far as capital,
you know, when you look at this whole political field, you've got about 20% on each end of the political spectrum that are ideologically motivated. You know, you've got your hardcore, what I call true heart conservatives, and you've got your hardcore true heart liberals. But then you've got that middle that, you know, given the right information and given the right pressure, you can move them. And so a lot of your lobbying is going to fall into that middle area of those that can be persuaded. And as the Tea Party has, I think the Tea Party is becoming a little more sophisticated. In the early days, they did not play well with others. And
that's the cleaned up version, right?
Well, I of all people, greatly value enthusiasm and zeal. But if you don't combine that enthusiasm and zeal with wisdom, it can get out of hand and it can make enemies and not friends. And one of the things that again, it goes back to what your mother taught you: always use good manners, and to do your homework. I'll tell you the story, like the father that told the son he walked to school 3 miles uphill both ways in 10 feet of snow. But in the early days, way before the internet, before Al Gore blessed us with the internet, to read bills, I had to go sit in the library and get the notebook down and read the bills. And then if I wanted to buy the bills, take them home, I went over to the bill room and paid 10 cents a page to buy the bills to take them home to read them. So to be able to turn your computer on at any time, 24/7, 365, and pull the legislative website up, and by the way, kudos to the people who designed and maintain our site. It is one of the best in the nation. And you go on other states' legislative websites and you'll see what I'm talking about. But This really makes it so easy now. You can look at the bills, who's on the committee, how the votes were cast. I mean, there's just so much information right there at your fingertips. And the best kind of lobbying you can do is very timely and very accurate, and to always use the bill number when you're talking to legislators. Everything functions by bill number up there, and so that's really important. But I will, just an example, one of the things you need to know is how this process works. And I think it's been 3 years ago, maybe four, and I right off the top of my head, I can't even remember what the bill number was, but I mean the hearing room was packed, the hall was packed. It was one of those smaller hearing rooms. I think it was room 31 down in the hall. That's not the large one. And there was some important bill, and they decided they were going to put an amendment on it. And so the committee chairman rolled the bill a week. And for those who may not know what that means, it means to put it off for another to the next meeting the next week. And, I mean, the people in the room didn't make a lot of noise, but you could hear the people out in the hall who were watching the TV screen just screaming bloody murder. And so I went out to try to explain that, and I got accosted by a couple of people. I mean, literally accosted. And, you know, I'm not very tall, and both of these guys were just towering over me and shouting me, and I was trying to explain to them that is the normal process. Now, I know that sometimes skullduggery goes on down there, but for goodness sakes, be smart enough and wise enough to know the difference. If you put a substantial amendment on a piece of legislation, most committees even have a rule that it will be rolled a week so that the committee members can study that amendment if it's a significant amendment. If it's just changing a word or two or punctuation or something like that, no, they'll go on and move it. And in fact, a lobbyist walked by and saw me with these two guys towering over me and hollering at me when I was trying to explain. I said, "Will you all wait? I'm on your side. I'm on your side. I'm trying to explain this to you." And a lobbyist saw me later, and he says, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Well, I was wondering when I was walking by." And I said, "Well, I didn't see you doing anything to help me out."
Left you hanging.
Yeah, he just left me there to fend for myself. But it was really interesting. About 3 weeks later, one of the same guys was down there, and I was walking with somebody and talking to them down the hall. And I just kind of saw people coming in my direction, but I wasn't paying attention to them because I was talking to somebody. And before I knew it, I was just absolutely wrapped up in somebody's arms. And I kind of looked up, and it was one of these guys that had been, you know, very ugly. And he apologized. And I said, and he also, like, he's whispering in my ear while he's got me clutched, you know, in his arms. And he said, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. I didn't know who you were. And I said, when I could back up from him a little bit, I said, it isn't about who I am. It's about being respectful and knowing what's going on down here.
Yeah.
And so that's really important. You have to know this process. And as I said, I know, you know, some skullduggery does go on, but this wasn't among it. And if you know how the process works, how the committees work, what their rules are, and what's allowed and what's not allowed, I mean, that really helps you understand. And, of course, everybody can contact their own legislator, and that's the most effective. And it's really effective if you worked in his campaign or her campaign.
Yeah.
Your calls really do get listened to, and your emails do get responded to. And
now, you mentioned committees, and I'm not sure. Anybody that's been up there much probably knows this, but a lot of people might not be aware. Talk about how important the committee process is. I mean, from my understanding, you know, it's make or break in the committee.
Oh,
sometimes
yeah.
That's the subcommittee. And that's really where you have – if it makes it to the floor, generally speaking.
Well, it is a multi-step process, as it should be. I know it's frustrating, and it's doubly frustrating when it happens to my bill, by the way. But you're making laws. You're making laws that people have to live by. And so they should be vetted. And they shouldn't be, and I have one complaint about this last year's session, and that is, to me, it seemed to me that the emphasis and the effort was more put on speed than it was on good government. And that bothered me, because I know some things that they're going to have to come back and they're going to have to work on this year, because they didn't get it just right last year. And I know that some things got put off just because they were so intent on getting out in April. And I'm all for efficiency, but I don't want to see things done just to do them fast, just to say we did them fast, you know. Anyway, but, yeah, that's another thing, is you have to know the process. Bills, there are standing committees that the bills are assigned to based on their subject matter. Some committees, there's not nearly as many subcommittees down there. Beth reduce the number of subcommittees and the number of standing committees down there, so there's fewer committees now. But the bill will start out, well, first of all, you have to have a sponsor, and then the bill has to be filed, and there's a cutoff date for that, so you have to know all of that. And then when the bill is assigned to a committee, then it goes to the subcommittee if there's one. And then you start working with the members of that subcommittee. And then if you can get it out of that subcommittee, it will go to the full committee. And then, again, it starts all over, and you can get, you know, you can win or lose at every step in this process. Then once it goes to that full committee, then that's where your lobbying effort takes place. And then if it's got a fiscal note, it goes to the budget subcommittee. Now, that used to be called the Black Hole Committee. It's not quite as bad as it used to be. I mean, literally, it was. And the reason it was called the Black Hole Committee is because things went in there and never came out.
Yeah.
But then they go to the full, the fiscal, the finance, after the budget sub, they go to finance. Then after finance, they'll go to the floor. No, they go to calendar and rules, and then they go to the floor. So,
yeah.
So you have to know how all those committees operate and who's on them and all that sort of thing if you want to be effective.
Yeah. We're up against a hard break here.
Okay.
We'll take a quick one and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to Inside Tennessee, and our guest is Bobby Petre. We will be right back.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Why would you say?
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait. Is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Concerted Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking to Bobby Petre from Tennessee Eagle Forum, talking about being an effective lobbyist in Nashville, Tennessee at the Capitol. Right before the break, Bobby, you were talking about the different steps, you know, a subcommittee, full committee, calendar and rules, fiscal review sometimes. And then it would go to the floor for a vote, correct? Is that the order? Okay. And of course, and you've been down here for a good while, but this is something else that if people are going to get involved with, they're going to need to know not just the steps that particular bill will have to go through, you know, which committees, but the committee chairs, any kind of survey the land and figure, okay, where are some possible problems, especially fiscal review, which you say it's not as bad as it used to be, but that could still be a deal killer if, you know, the budget's already been announced, and if it's going to go, if that particular thing has not been allotted for in the budget, that can be a problem as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you've had Judd on, have you not, to talk about his new committee?
Oh, yes, and probably have him again.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to use that as an example. that started out as a piece of legislation that had been honed down just to set up a study committee, and it ended up with a fiscal note. And because it was not covered in the budget, didn't have a line item, we knew it would not get through the fiscal review committee. And that's when he came up with the brilliant idea of making it a subcommittee of the Government Operations Committee, which meets year-round, that took away the fiscal note on it. So, I mean, it was just a brilliant idea, and I just love what he did and what he is doing. So that was one way to address that fiscal note. And then sometimes some things are so important that they will try to work with the budget and, you know, find a way to fund something if it's really that important. But you really have to look at all aspects of what you're doing and how it would be funded if it does have a fiscal note. And knowing what can and can't be done, and again, that's a lot based on relationships too. It's just as you work with the legislators, one of the things that I try to do, and in fact, I was with a legislator probably 2 months ago, maybe a month ago now, and she just kind of smiled because I always have usually color coded information, bullet point sheets, or that sort of thing. And in fact, if I'm working on several bills, the way I keep them separated is I use different color paper for the resource information on each bill. And so I'm walking down the hall with these, you know, yellow sheets, blue sheets, pink sheets, green sheets. That helps me keep everything straight. But it helps to be able to leave something for them and you know, to make sure that it's very accurate information. So again, you're building a trust relationship there. And I will tell you, one of the things that I think is most important is saying thank you. Early on, when I have very nice, lovely thank you notes now that I use, but in the early days, I had made red hearts that had the Eagle Forum logo on it, and I hand wrote thank you notes on it. And the first bill that I worked on in 1987, I got 5 amendments put on the floor of a bill, of a sex ed bill that Lois DeBerry was sponsoring. And she was not happy. She was so unhappy that she pulled the bill and sent it back to Calendar and Rules, which suited me fine. But I wrote thank you notes on those hearts and laid them in the chairs of the 5 sponsors of those floor amendments before I left that day. And the next time I was in one of the legislators' office from Knoxville, he had it pinned up on the wall in his office. And I said, Pete, why have you got that pinned up on the wall? He said, it's the first time anybody's ever thanked me.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
that was my
response.
That's
something to think about, too. You know, and I've got friends that go up there a lot more than I get to go, and I try to treat people the way I'd want to be treated if I were in that job. You know, especially if the guy's not in your district and he's willing, the guy or the girl who's not in your district, but they're willing to take some of their time and listen to somebody who's not one of their constituents, you know, they deserve to be treated respectful and they deserve, you know, a thank you for their time. One thing I do want to ask you, so the people out there are straight on this, obviously, you know, the best thing to do is be involved and make sure you get good people in office. The next best thing is to actually go there in person if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we start talking phone calls and emails and or written letters, I don't know, that's probably kind of a black hole anymore, I imagine, with all the
threats out there. It's not at the state level. It's not at the state level. It is at the federal level because they go through Timbuktu or something now because of the, you know, threats of powders being put in them. But yeah, mail at the state capitol is still popular. I mean, it's still effective. At the federal level, faxes are very effective because, you know, people do take faxes out of the fax machine, and they don't have to go through some place in New Jersey to get tested for drugs or powders or whatever. But, no, letters are very popular. In fact, legislators like letters from young people, that they like that. But phone calls and letters are wonderful. Emails, they're becoming more effective as you get more and more legislators. In the early days, a lot of the older legislators or longer serving legislators didn't pay a whole lot of attention to that. But as the I would say the median age of the legislators have been reduced, and you've got people in there who, you know, you use email all the time and use your iPads and all that sort of thing, it's more effective than it used to be, probably, in general. But any contact, I mean, a lot of times, if it's a real hot topic, sometimes they're not even writing the names down. They're just putting marks under, you know, yes and no and yes and no and yes and no. And but it every one of those contacts makes a huge difference, because for every person that calls, you've got probably 60 out there that won't. And I think it's important to let, if you know a legislator is like on your side and supporting what you want, to thank them, because sometimes they need that encouragement just to be able to say, you know, I've got all these constituents in my district, or all of these people across the state that are supporting what I'm doing, and that gives them, you know, some evidence
motivation.
That what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it gives them evidence that what they're doing is right. And then if you thank the people for what they're doing, then when they're doing something wrong, you've earned a place to stand to say, I wish you wouldn't do this, or I wish you would change this.
Right.
And so, you know, again, that's just building that good relationship. In fact, sometimes it you know, part of it's just being, I guess, discreet. I know I have a favorite thing that I do when I think a bill is really, really ridiculous or dumb. Sometimes I will go in and say, will you help me understand what you're trying to do here?
and they know from that phrasing that you think there's a problem with it then.
But I haven't been insulting or I haven't demeaned what they're doing. And sometimes it is that maybe I don't understand what they're doing, you know. And so, I mean, you're just talking about technique. Again, how can you get what you want to do done and preserve and keep the relationship to be, you know, what you want it to be? And I want to say the other thing, too, if you come down there, look professional. I think that's important because, like it or not, we are judged by the way we look, and we always ought to be neat and look nice.
Yeah. I've got to take a real quick live read, and then we will be right back. We've got a few more minutes with you. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. Don't go away. We'll be right back. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design. Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, immediately following Soldier for Patriotism with Michael Smith on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Bobby Petray from Tennessee Eagle Forum. Now, before the sessions usually they start in January. I don't know if it's the first week, second week, or whatever in January.
Well, I think it's the like first Tuesday after the first Monday or some such like that. It's usually the first week of the within the first 12 days of the year. Yeah.
Right, but you remember at the beginning of our conversation, you talked about the 500 lobbyists that are up there, and those people are not. It's not like they don't do anything when session is out. So those people are getting all their bills together now. And if I'm not mistaken, the GOP caucus meets sometime in October. And so that's another thing that people need to think about. If you don't look at a bill or think about some sort of legislation prior to the session starting, you're starting behind the power curve already, correct?
Yeah, that's true. But most of the other, a lot of the other lobbyists, a lot of them are attorneys, and so they have other responsibilities when the legislature is not in session. But you're right, and in fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because something new that we started having to deal with this past year was a limit on the number of bills that the House members could introduce. Every 2 year session, the number of bills, the total number of bills and resolutions, but the bills had escalated. And the last, I would say, up until this session, the 2 year session that we're in right now, which is the 108th General Assembly, last year was the first session, and this year will be the second session, the 108th. We were running over that 2 year session over 4,000 bills. Well, yeah. Yeah, try to read all those and keep up with what's going on. And this year, Speaker Harwell wanted to reduce the number of bills that each legislator could file to 10, and they ended up changing that. But they did put the limit at 15. So that automatically, of course, limits what the senators can introduce. But 15 bills, when you've had people up there that would introduce as many as 50 or 60. In fact, one Democrat legislator, 1 year I counted, he had introduced 124 bills, most of which were caption bills. And that would mean that what happens is you write a caption that opens a part of the code with no intentions of, maybe you're changing the punctuation. That's what the bill says, but you will strip that out and put some more substantial information in it as it goes through the committee system. So that has done away with that, which is good. So, but with the 15 bill limit now, yeah, you do have to be very thoughtful, and you have to plan ahead, and you have to talk to people that, you know, if you want somebody to sponsor a bill, to say, you know, will you hold one of your 15 slots for XYZ, and see if they will. It makes it a lot more complicated, and I didn't think I was going to like it, but I think it worked out all right last year. It just seemed like it was to start it. It just sort of happened so fast, and I think it caught everybody off guard last year. But I think, you know, you have to learn to work within the system, whatever the system is. So that's what you do.
And that's a lot of bills. That's still a lot of bills, 15 per, and you've got 99 reps. That's still a lot of bills. And that's another thing that, you know, we need to keep in mind is there's no way any legislator up there is going to know everything about all possible topics. You know, they have whatever their life experiences is, and then they have their whatever committee they're on, and that's their focus. So there's going to be a lot of things they're not going to have a clue about. So that's why it's important that we bring them in good stuff so that they got something that they can that they can rely on. You go back to the building trust. And that's, you know, it can't be 4 or 5 pages because they don't have time to read that. So you got to get it down in bullet format, and you've got to be reliable. There's no way for them to know everything.
Right. And in fact, that's another good point that you brought up there is the majority of the 99 legislators will not have seen anything about a bill that's on the floor until it gets to the floor. If they were not on the committee that it came through, or if it came through finance and they weren't on finance, they haven't heard any discussion. They don't know what the bill does. And if you've ever been down there, I mean, that place, it's like a washing machine. It just whirls all the time down there when the legislature's in session. And
oh, yeah.
It's very fast-paced, and the legislators have to work around their committee schedule to see people and to spend time looking at the bills. And so anything that we can do that will help them get their job done, not just their job, but do a good job for the state of Tennessee. We all have to live under these laws. And so we really do want them to be the best. Judiciary Committee is not like it used to be. When Curtis Burson was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee for many, many, many years down there, and I have sat in that committee when they would meet for 3 and 4 and 5 hours at the time, and that they would spend 45 minutes talking about punctuation.
Good Lord.
But, you know, as frustrating as that was sometimes, particularly if I had a bill on the calendar and I was waiting for him to get to it, but, you know, it makes a difference. Again, these are going to be laws. These are going to affect our lives. And so you really do want them to be fine-tuned and combed through, and you really want them to be the best that they can be. And so, again, any day that they're on the floor of the House and Senate, many of the legislators will not have had the opportunity to have any discussion or any insight on the piece of legislation that's on that calendar that day.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that discussion goes on in committees, and if you're not on the committee the bill came through, then you don't know it.
Yeah. Well, Bobby, I appreciate you being with us. Before you go, you want to give us a quick plug for your event on the 5th of October?
Oh, I do. I want to tell you, this is going to be the best On Eagle's Wings, I think, that we have ever had. And if you'll go on our website, tneagleforum.org, and look at the tab on the left that says On Eagle's Wings, you can register online or you can print out a form and mail it in. We literally have national experts on all the hot topics of the day. And in fact, the other thing I will encourage you to do is to go on the legislative website and watch the Common Core hearings. We worked really hard to put together. We brought in 7 speakers that spoke opposing Common Core, and they had 7 speakers supporting it, and that's worth viewing. But one of the ladies that was here to speak at the Common Core hearing will be one of our speakers on Common Core at our event. Her name is Jane Robbins, and she's an attorney, and she's an expert on the whole thing of Common Core. So we'll have immigration, we'll have health care, Obamacare. You won't want to miss it, and you'll really get a whole lot of information brought to you by experts in one day. So I hope people will come and go online and sign up and come to see us.
Well, I'm sure you'll have a packed house. Well, Bobby, I appreciate you coming on. I hope to have you back, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Inside Tennessee. Don't go away. We'll be right back. David Fowler should be with us right after the break.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it. But he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit MakingHomeAffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit MakingHomeAffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Just a reminder, Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council. Go to our website at www.tn4action.com. That's www.tn4action.com. You can also go to the TN4 website and download past episodes of the show. Well, we should have David Fowler here with us in just a couple minutes, but I'm going to remind you of a couple upcoming events that you might want to know about.
at 3rd of October, 6 p.m. at the Lebanon Fairgrounds, the first annual Freedom Pack Dinner with Steve Gill, political analyst, WKRN Channel 2, honoring two outstanding Tennessee conservatives who have stood firm, both in word and deed, advocating conservative values and principles. Andy Miller, founder and chairman of the Tennessee Freedom Coalition, John Harris, founder and president of Tennessee Firearms Association, plus honoring two courageous Wilson County military veterans, Ron Ballard and Oscar Rubio. Tickets are $50 per person. Table sponsorships $300. Business sponsorships $500. Purchase tickets, call 615-754-4632. Email TennesseeFreedomPack@gmail.com. And we have an event coming up in Stewart County, From Islam to Christianity, Experience the Power of God's Movement Among Muslims Today. Did you know there are over 35,000 Muslims that call Nashville home? More Muslims have come to Christ in the last 20 years than the previous 1,400 years combined. God is on the move in the Muslim world. What role might you play in this historic movement? This is a presentation from the Crescent Project, Matt Bonner, and it's going to be Sunday, September 29th, 6:30 p.m. at the Cross Creek Baptist Church, 882 Red Top Road, Indian Mound, Tennessee. Point of contact is Dave Young at 931-627-0791. Okay, not sure where Dave is at, so we will just try to keep this going best we can. Once again, the number is 718-305-7176. If you got a question, you got a comment, call in and let's talk about it. As I understand it, the Beat Lamar Project had one of their events in Maryville this past weekend, and the final betting is this weekend for Beat Lamar. I think that's on the 28th, and Coalition for a Constitutional Conservative, or excuse me, the Constitutional Senate is on the 29th, and whoever they vote for, that's whoever all those 60 Tea Party groups have agreed to support. So it's interesting to see how that turns out. I hope they both get behind the same person. And I think we have David with us now.
Yeah. Hey, David. I'm sorry. I set my alarm clock on my new phone, and I don't think it went off, or else I've gone deaf, one or the other. But
hey, no problem.
It's got to
no
be
problem.
Fine. Anyway, thanks for letting me be on the show today, and or tonight, I guess, and I think you wanted to talk a little bit about where are things going on the sex issues in Tennessee, same-sex marriage and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, that was the gist of it. There's been some decisions and some access and things have happened in Tennessee. I appreciate you coming on. We're about three
sure.
minutes before break. Just let you know
okay.
that that's coming, but let's go ahead and
okay.
get started. Fill us in,
okay.
if you can give it from a lawyer's perspective in layman's terms, if that's possible.
Well, I mean, Jesus was born of a virgin. I guess it could be possible. the fallout is starting to happen in our own state as a result of the Supreme Court's marriage decision back in, excuse me, the end of June. And the first real sort of shot across the bow in Tennessee, which has a constitutional definition of marriage as a man and a woman, but a little city in Collegedale, a suburb of Chattanooga that I actually represented in the Senate. And it's a community that's predominantly been made up of the Seventh-day Adventists, the big church there and big Seventh-day Adventist University, and been very, very conservative community all my life that I've known. But all of a sudden, they found themselves with some commissioners, and by a vote of 4-1, decided that if an employee could present evidence that they had entered into a same-sex marriage in a state that recognized it, they would be treated as married under the city's health insurance policy for its employees. And I think people were kind of shocked that happened. Apparently, the people that showed up at the committee council meeting were overwhelmingly opposed, but they had a lesbian employee and they wanted to be nice to her. And so they went ahead and voted to do that. They then realized that what they did was unconstitutional. So rather than reverse it, In my opinion, they just made things worse by saying, well, if you've just been living together for 6 months and you can show that, you know, you're committed to each other and there's evidence that you share bills, then we're going to consider you a domestic partnership, I guess is what they call it.
And so they went from bad to worse.
Marriage. Yeah, they went from bad to worse, in my opinion. Excuse me. And now, City of Chattanooga, we anticipate that they will have an ordinance or a proposal resolution filed by the 1st of October to do a similar thing. There's been a councilman in Goodlettsville, one of the newer, younger councilmen, can't remember his name right now, who has said that he thought it would be appropriate, and I would presume that he will try to bring it forward at some point there in that community. Nashville and Knoxville have city council members that have already indicated that they're looking at putting something together. So that's kind of where we are, is that it's a classic case to me of they may not be violating the letter of the law, but they're certainly violating the spirit of it. And
we're going to have to hold up right there. I'm up against a hard break, Dave, but when we come back, I want to take up right where you got us to there. Don't go away. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it. That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every man.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. We're talking to David Fowler from the Tennessee Family Action Council.
Family Action Council,
And we're talking about the subject of, I guess you could say, gay marriage in Tennessee. Before the break, Dave, you mentioned several city councils have decided that they would, despite what the state constitution says, that they would go ahead and pass laws in their city that would provide benefits to those who were had a same-sex marriage outside of Tennessee.
Are living in a non-marital relationship.
Now, what's been the has the state reacted? I mean, have you heard anything from the state government on this? Have they said, hey, wait a minute, we have a state constitution and you have to go by it?
No, I haven't heard anything from the state yet about it. But and really, there are going to be issues that arise at the state level. I don't know if any of your listeners heard or saw the story in the paper Saturday, I guess it was, that some Tennessee residents are going to other states and getting married, same-sex marriage, and they return, and then one of them wants to adopt the other partner's last name, just like often happens with a woman will take the name of her husband. And so they go down to the driver's license bureau with their wedding certificate and say, here, I married Susie Jones, and I want to change my name to Sally Jones. And those folks are frustrated and angered and hurt and wounded and all that because the state will not recognize their marriage for changing their driver's license. And there are going to be issues associated with the Hall income tax, excuse me, where there's a deduction or there's a filing status, just like under federal returns, if you're married. And so there's going to be a whole lot of pressure to deal with the issue. And under our Constitution, you can't just say, well, okay, if you got a same-sex marriage license, then we're going to go ahead and change your driver's license and all these other things, because that would be unconstitutional. So I guess the risk that we face at the state level is, will there be a push to, in essence, do away with the concept really of marriage, or and just go to a domestic partner kind of concept, or say, well, you can either be married or in a domestic partnership. And, you know, that just opens up a whole kettle.
Oh, a whole can of worms, work. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I did know that a couple of men went, I can't remember if they were from another state or they're here, but anyway, they got married in another state, and they now live over in Madison County. And not getting along well, they filed for divorce. And so the question will be, in our state, as it has been in other states, you know, can you get divorced under our state laws if we in
our state doesn't recognize gay marriage?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
yeah,
so what
yeah.
do you do? And the problem is, I mean, I'm not an unsympathetic person, but you know, the beauty of our system of government is that states have inherently had the power to determine their own domestic policy. You know, things like driver's licenses and what deductions you get for your state taxes and who can qualify for certain retirement benefits or who has priority under inheritance laws or all kinds of laws. All kinds of laws throughout the state are based upon this assumption of marriage.
Right.
And that marriage is a man and a woman. And now these folks are going somewhere else and then coming back and complaining that, you know, our laws won't recognize what we've done. And it's kind of like, you know, you can't live under the laws of two different states simultaneously without complicating your life. And
yeah.
And that's where we are. It's a little bit like maybe jumping up and down in a mud puddle and then complaining that your clothes got dirty or something.
take a call real quick.
Yes.
Yeah. Got Kurt on the line here.
Yes. Yeah.
Kurt, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, Dave. David?
Yeah,
good to have you on the show again. I don't know how far we can chase this rabbit, but I'm a little bit of a disadvantage here because the information that I've got floating around in my head is on my other computer, and I can't access it right now. But there is a rabbi out in California who writes extensively on the, you may know what his name is, I don't know, but he writes extensively on this. And I'd have to pull that information up to give you his name. But if I remember correctly in something of his that I read, okay, the word marriage, I think we can get a little legalistic here. To be married, one is in a state of matrimony. Is that not legally correct?
That's what we would call it. I don't know that it's a legal term of matrimony. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure about the legality and how the word matrimony. Okay, the word matrimony, if I understand the meaning of it right, that comes from the root word meaning mate. Is that not correct?
You know, I do not know that. I don't know.
Well, and I may be in error on this, but I think that's the way that this rabbi explained it, and it sounds right to me. It sounds like it makes sense. But anyway, from a lawyer's standpoint, you may want to chase that rabbit sometime. But anyway, how can one be married or in the state of matrimony if they cannot reproduce? That's the heart of my question there. This is,
well,
to me,
yeah,
this is what makes it all so screwball.
Yeah, what needs to be appreciated is that this concept of same-sex marriage rests upon a certain premise, and every argument that anybody makes rests upon a premise. And then you reason from that premise to the next conclusion and to the next conclusion. And the fundamental premise of same-sex marriage is that there is no essential difference between a man and a woman. That's really at the root of it. There's no essential difference between a man and a woman. And that's why as this concept of same-sex marriage and gay marriage has elevated in its prominence, we see trailing right behind it all this stuff about gender identity, transgenderism, gender confusion, gender roles.
One perversity leads to another, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, the gender confusion is just simply a working out of the premise behind same-sex marriage. That if the sexes truly aren't any different, then, you know, Joe Smith can be a girl if he wants to be. Susie Smith can be a boy if she wants to be. And you can go back and forth if you want to. And so it's just an outworking. That gender confusion is outworking in the underlying premise. And I would say to people who say, well, I'm for marriage equality, one of the things that conservatives tend to do is we immediately begin to defend our position rather than say, oh, help me understand why you're for marriage equality. Do you agree that it is not wrong to treat things that are different differently? That equal protection only requires that you treat things that are the same equally? And everybody say, yes. I mean, that's right. So, in other words, you're for marriage equality because you believe that there is no essential difference between a man and a woman and no essential difference between the relationship two men have or two women have from the relationship that a man and a woman would have. And I think if you ask the average guy on the street, you know, do you think your wife, do you think your girlfriend, do you think women, are kind of different from men? My guess is most guys would say yes, and most women would say yes, you know. Is that to say that we're all fit neatly in a box? No, there are some guys that are more masculine than others in many ways. There are some women that are more feminine than others in a way. But our sort of psychological, emotional makeup, oftentimes, is really, generally speaking, different. And then, Kurt, you pointed out that there is an essential difference between the joinder of two people that whose sexuality is completely incompatible biologically with procreation and those whose joinder is complementary, necessarily capable of reproduction. Now, the issue isn't whether you do or don't reproduce, but clearly there is a distinction in the relationship between two men and a man and a woman when it comes to the complementariness of the sexes. There is no joinder of reproductive organs between two men that would ever, under any circumstance, produce a child.
Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. I've got to jump in real quick. I've got to do this live read.
Yes.
And then we'll get right back to the discussion here. There comes a time when good things have to give way to great things. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing like a Texas Longhorn, which is why Michael B. Smith now has his own show. Check out Soldier of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. But don't be worried. He's the same Michael B. you've come to know and love, and you'll hear even more great interviews and awesome conservative commentary from your very own main man, Michael B. Smith, on Soldier of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to David Fowler from Family Action Council of Tennessee. We're talking about the issue of same-sex marriage here in Tennessee and how we have some counties and some individuals trying to push that envelope in our state, so to speak.
I would turn
it back over to you.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. One other thing that I would note just procedurally where we are, I understand from a pretty good source, generally pretty reliable, that that there will be a lawsuit filed probably before the end of October to strike down the state's constitutional definition of marriage and the state's Defense of Marriage Act, the statute. We have both. One lawsuit, I understand, will be a couple that got married in another state. They've moved here. And they are suing sort of on the contract clause of the Constitution and the Privileges and Immunities Clause that says that states should recognize as valid contracts that are valid in another state. And historically, we've often done that. Not in every regard, but in many regards we have. So that'll be one lawsuit. The other lawsuit will just simply be some homosexual couples who have gone to apply for a marriage license and been declined, and they will sue, and the basis of their lawsuit will predominantly be the equal protection argument, that they're not being accorded equal treatment under the law. And that goes back to what we were just saying, is that if equal treatment under the law does require that if two persons, two relationships, two situations are essentially the same in all essential regards and every important regard, then indeed they ought to be treated equally. Nobody is against equal protection under the law. What we disagree about is whether or not there are differences between men and women, and differences between relationships between two men and two women. And if they are differences, then it is not unfair or unequal or discriminatory to treat them differently. The example that I give some people is one I used on the Senate floor. The teacher gives out an assignment and says, okay, I want all the students in the class to draw a picture of a square. One question test, draw a square. We're learning our geometric shapes. So David Vance turns in a square. Well, Kurt, the last caller, he decides to turn in a circle. Now, is it unfair for the teacher to give David Vance 100 and give Kurt a 0? My guess is, everybody say, well, no. But now what happens when Kurt says, but that's just not fair. I drew a geometric shape, you know, and his is a geometric shape. We both have geometric shapes. Why can't I get 100?
He gets an ACLU lawyer and tries it that way, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But when we put it in the context of something that everybody can easily grasp, nobody would say the student who turned in the circle is being discriminated against or treated unfairly by not being given the same kind of grade as the person that drew a square. And I've said, you know, marriage is the name we gave to a certain kind of relationship. That's just what it is. Like we gave the name square to a certain shape. And there can be other relationships. They may be very important to the parties. They may be important to me. For instance, there's a relationship between my daughter and my dad, her grandfather. And they love each other. They're very committed to one another. And, you know, it's not a sexual relationship, but that's an important relationship, you know.
Right.
But it's not the same kind of relationship. And so that's all we're saying is that marriage is the name we gave to this relationship over here. And these other relationships are not by definition marriages any more than I can draw a round square. They just don't exist. You can't have one. And what bothers me among many, particularly those elected officials who profess to be Christians, is that if what I've just said is true, that the law only requires you to treat equal things equally, then those Christians who vote for these kinds of things are saying that these other sexual non-marital relationships are equal to a married relationship. They have to be saying that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to treat them the same.
Right.
You only treat the things that are equal the same. So So, you know, I would wish for some of these Christian council members and county commissioners and whoever else they are, their pastor would walk up to them and say, I just got one question. Are men and women, apart from morally and ethically, the same? And are you saying that two men having a sexual relationship is equal and the same as a man and a woman? And if the person says, yeah, I think they're all equal, then by golly, they ought to vote for it. But if they think they're different, they'll not vote for it. It's as simple
Dave,
as that.
You know, you mentioned that you haven't heard anything from the state out of this. You haven't heard anything from the attorney general.
Yeah.
You're hearing all
right.
these things. There's got to be people in our state government that know that this is going on. If they're prepping anything for it, we're not hearing about it. What would, you know, other than right now getting that type of information to our legislators prior to the session, can you anything else that you suggest that we do at this point?
Well,
Praying.
Right now, I would suggest that people contact some of their local elected officials. You know, the school boards have sometimes different personnel policies, I think, than maybe the county commission would have or city council. And I would find out where do they stand on treating these non-marital relationships the same as marriage when it comes to the personnel policies. I would ask them, where are you on this? There are any elections that are coming up at some point, that's an issue that needs to be brought up. Where are you on this? I will say that the state attorney general's office under our law is in a bit of a different posture than that of other states, in that our attorney general can't go around just suing people, so to speak. And that's one of the interesting things is I've talked with some of the leadership in the Senate and the legal counsel for the legislature. There's really not anybody that has legal standing to enforce a constitutional amendment. Now, you can have legal standing to challenge one and say, hey, this shouldn't apply to me. It violates, you know, my freedom of religion or freedom of speech or my right to equal protection. But there's nobody under our law who can bring a lawsuit technically against Collegedale and say, hey, you're violating the state constitution. It's quite an anomaly. And the
Attorney
General's office, I was talking with Lieutenant Governor Ramsey about that the other day, and he wasn't aware of it. But see, most of the time what happens is let's say that the legislature or the Department of Environment through its rulemaking process says, hey, you can't throw tires into the regular landfill. And so there's a city over here that says, well, disposing of the tires in another way is just too expensive, and they thumb their nose and say, we're going to throw them in the landfill. Well, they're violating the law. In that case, the Department of Environment and Conservation has authority by statute to go sue that city, in which case the Attorney General represents them. But there isn't any kind of law that allows anybody to just say, hey, you know, local government, you're violating the Constitution.
That's crazy. You know, you would think there was.
Yeah.
That's just you would think that'd be automatic. Hey, Dave, I hate to let you go, but I've got the next guest on, and I appreciate you coming on, and I'll definitely have you back.
Okay. And, we'll keep you informed on this issue as it comes along. Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks again. I appreciate you.
Blessings to you. Bye bye.
All right. Take care. You listen to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we have on the line with us Rose Shepherd from the Silent Soldier Ruck March. How you doing tonight, Rose?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
Doing fine, doing fine. Why don't you tell us, now you're actually involved in two different organizations geared towards veterans. What's the first one? Coffee with a Purpose or Coffee for a Cause?
Coffee for Cause. Yes, that was created to where we can actually offer private label coffee to veteran organizations to help them raise money. And then out of my frustration, my dad served in World War II in Korea, and I am an adopted mom to many of our veterans and some active duty as well. I just became frustrated, and of our armed forces not being honored and respected, and the country has kind of forgotten how to honor and respect all of our warriors who have fought for our country. So that's how the Silent Soldier Ruck March was actually born, was out of just my personal frustration.
And what exactly, in what ways do you think they're not properly respected or disrespected, or that they've been disrespected? In what ways?
Well, our veterans are not being taken care of the way they should be. I have worked with many of them who have gone through the darkness of post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury, and the help for them is not out there. I mean, you know as well as I do, the backlog is just astronomical, and when they do reach out for help, more times than not, they're given the runaround and they're refused help when they're reaching out for help. Our suicide rates are 22 a day within our veteran and military community, and I think this is because of the fact that the current things that are in place are just not working. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but I think it's time that we as a veteran and military community come together to start helping our own. We've always believed in no man left behind, and I think this applies to the fact that the family members need to embrace this as well, too. We have got millions of veterans that are currently alive, and if you take the current amount of veterans who are currently alive, and you multiply that times five family members, we have got a strong force of about 127 million people when you start including the family members. So when you start looking
wow.
at those kind of numbers, yeah, that's nobody has ever done the math on this, and those are conservative numbers. We have the capability of, we have our own demographic of 127 million plus to start taking care of our own, to start changing things, to start making some noise, to see that these changes are made and start taking place. But what my objective is that I would like for us to be able to rally this community together through the Silent Soldier Ruck March. And we start working on some solutions amongst ourselves, and that is to bring some natural health and wellness solutions that are actually working to the table for our veterans and our active duty personnel to experience and try and see what works for them. Because like I said, what is in place is not working.
Now, the Silent Soldier Ruck March actually involves an actual ruck march. You're actually in Colorado. You're not in Tennessee, but as I understand it, you're going to be coming to Tennessee as part of the Silent Soldier Ruck March. Can you talk about that a little bit?
We will be, and we've had some hiccups. Our event that was scheduled to launch out this year has been now pushed to the spring of 2014. We had some permit issues, and so we are working through those permit issues to make sure that we do not encounter any problems along the way. And we will be coming through Nashville in the Tennessee area when this thing takes place in 2014. We haven't got dates locked in yet. We're still working on that since we ended up having to shift from this year to early spring. But we've got 18 veterans from around the country who are volunteering their time to honor all who have fought for our country. And these veterans are actually going to be putting boots on the ground. Our initial route was 2,400 miles. We're looking
wow.
at a route now that's much longer because of where we're going to be anticipating starting. So we will be putting in more than 2,400 miles in the spring. And like I said, we will be coming to Nashville. We've got a tremendous amount of support from that community and all of the people in the Tennessee area who want to come together and help honor and respect all who have fought for our country. And this will be an annual event because I just feel that it's necessary that we as a country need to come together and start honoring all who have sacrificed so much before, during, and in our future armed forces as well. So that's what we're actually going to be doing. 18 veterans, 2,400 miles plus at this point in time now, where we will end up in Arlington National Cemetery with a honoring laying a wreath ceremony that will be done by all of the guys who participated in this event.
Wow, that's a ruck march right there, 2,400 miles. We've got to take a real quick break. Stay with us till after the break, and I've got some more questions for you. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Rose Shepherd from the Silent Soldier Ruck March.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are talking to Rose Shepherd from the Silent Soldier Ruck March. Rose, you mentioned some natural healing things that you're doing for the soldiers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
We are. We're introducing natural medicine to our veterans, which encompasses a lot of different modalities, including acupuncture, cranial sacral therapy, massage therapy, sound therapy. I've been doing some events in the Colorado Springs area where we have been having tremendous results. We have had all veterans from all years come in, and they are able to actually try out these modalities for themselves. And you can sit there and watch the changes happening on their faces as they are actually experiencing some of these sessions. And these are just 10 and 15 minute sessions. And I've always made sure that I've talked to all of our veterans who attend these events to get the feedback from them. And 99% of them actually feel something. And a large portion of these veterans are scheduling follow-up treatments with these practitioners where they have had a successful 10 or 15 minute session where they've actually felt a difference in dealing with their post-traumatic stress and their traumatic brain injuries. So that is what we're taking on the road with the Silent Soldier Ruck March, and we will be having a two-day expo event in Nashville when we get all of our dates and everything moved back in place, where we will be offering these type of sessions, free sessions, for our veterans and our active duty personnel, as well as the veteran families and military families, because it's not only the warriors that are suffering, it's the families that are going through some struggling too. So we want them to be able to kind of test drive these different wellness modalities, because we know that this is not a one-size-fits-all. Every person is going to have something different that something resonates with them within these different modalities.
How many people have gone through this, these different treatments you're talking about?
We've had about 50 different veterans go through this, and it was kind of a trial run out here in Colorado just to see what the response was. So we still have a large number of these veterans that are still in treatment at this point in time, and they are it's a success story because they are now able to manage their post-traumatic stress symptoms, and they are able to control the triggering mechanisms that happen with post-traumatic stress, and it's alleviated a lot of the struggles with our traumatic brain injury veterans as well, too. Before we took this on the road, I wanted to make sure that we what our results were going to be in a trial run out here just to see what the results were, and they have been outstanding with the results of this. So in my heart, this is what I want to do. If we can reach just one veteran and help him to deal with what he's struggling with a little bit better, then that's my mission has been met. But we hope to be able to touch a lot more than that. But initially, that's what my wish was, that we could, if we could just touch one, then I would be happy.
How expensive is this, and do you have like a set financial goal
for the
certain number of money that you can raise in order to treat X number? Do you have something like that?
We are actually working with practitioners, and they are they can go through our screening program. We just are not allowing any practitioner to put hands on our veterans. We have got a director of wellness, and she actually has a healing ranch out here in Colorado. And all practitioners have to go through her to be approved to go through our wellness program, where they become one of our practitioners nationwide, whatever state they live in. They can contact us, but they have to go through the training program on how to work with our veterans, because our veterans are different than the civilian population, and they have to be educated on how to do the intake information on them and also how to go through the treatment process as well, because it's much different when you're dealing with post-traumatic stress and TBI. These practitioners that we've already aligned ourselves with are offering discounted rates for our veterans. Our mission with the Silent Soldier Breath March is to be able to raise enough money where we can take care of however many veterans that we may need to help them financially keep continuing going through these treatments, because we don't want them to stop and have finances get in the way of stopping those treatments when they are successful. So that is a big portion of what the Silent Soldier Breath March is we are trying to raise money to help cover a portion of what those expenses would be going through these treatments for our veterans.
Right. Now, do you have, only got a couple minutes left here, do you have a website or anything else that you can direct everybody to? And also, when do you think you'll have your schedule for the spring ready?
We should have our schedule within the next 2 weeks as far as when the spring launch will be. And we do have a website, and we have a Facebook page as well. That's where a lot of our traffic is on our Facebook page, and it's Silent Soldier Rock March on Facebook. And we have a website up called silentsoldierrockmarch.org.
Okay, great. Well, hey, when you do get your schedule, I mean, I've got your email, but when you get your schedule, please send it out to me. I'll announce it on the show, and we'll have you back some between now and then. And
okay.
Certainly when we get ready to get them in Nashville, we'll certainly have you on. But hey,
okay.
God bless you for what you're doing, and thank you for coming on.
Well, Dave, thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
All right. Hey, well, you take care, and thanks again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Our next guest is Matt Bonner with the Crescent Project, and I mentioned a couple of times this evening about what this ministry does in dealing with people who were former Muslims and have converted to Christianity. And I mentioned that we have an event coming up Sunday, September 29th, 6:30 at Cross Creek Baptist Church in Indian Mounds. That's between Clarksville and Dover. Matt, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, Dave. Doing great. Glad to be on with you.
Hey, I appreciate you coming on. I've read the ad a couple times tonight, but I'm going to let you elaborate a little bit more about your organization.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. I work with Crescent Project, and Crescent Project is a national Christian ministry focused on equipping the church to share the gospel with Muslims, and we have representatives all across the country. I serve as a regional director covering the southeastern region of the United States, and my role is to simply mobilize the church, to mobilize the body of Christ to serve and to inspire and equip the church to share the gospel with Muslims. And so that's what we do as an organization. We're an equipping organization, and we focus on equipping the church here in North America to reach out to Muslims.
And there's quite a few Muslims in Tennessee, and specifically in Nashville. Now, how many do you have, how many do you know of that have converted from Islam to Christianity in the Nashville area?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I know that there are dozens and dozens, and actually I would say untold numbers because of this at the rate at which they're converting, but also because many of them are not able to come out and go public with it. In other words, I know for a fact that there are a number of them that just simply aren't. Through friends who have converted and who I've met with have told me that there are a number of others that they know who simply have not gone public. And so there's a large number. It's hard to put a number, but I have a network of believers from a Muslim background that I know of that we work with, and there's at least 20 to 25, on that list, on that network that we're in contact with.
And, you mentioned that a lot of them haven't gone public, and a lot of people might not realize that, here in America, if somebody becomes a Christian who wasn't, sometimes they lose some friends over it, or maybe people kid them about it or make fun of them or don't take them serious, whatever the case might be. There's a certain level of, criticism that might be directed at you for becoming a Christian. But these people are actually risking a little more than that even here, aren't they?
Absolutely. They are. And you see, with Islam, there's no freedom of religion, and so you're not allowed to leave Islam. And so you can be greatly persecuted if you do. And so, and even here in America, you're right, it's not just overseas. You would think that here in America they wouldn't be threatened. Now, of course, they have much more of a chance here to thrive and to be able to do well, making that conversion. But they are still very persecuted. And I know a number of examples of people who have dealt with persecution here, having converted out of Islam. So it's a very real threat, and it comes from the apostasy law. What's referred to as the apostasy law. It goes all the way back to the early times of Islam in the Ridda Wars, where shortly after Muhammad died, they basically converted back a lot of the tribes that had left Islam after Muhammad died, and so ever since then, it's been illegal to leave Islam.
Wow. Matt, I've got to take a real quick break for a live read, and then we'll get right back to the Crescent Project.
Great.
Join Delaware political veteran Christopher Manti every Friday right here on conservativenationmedia.com for the Christopher Manti Show at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central for a fresh take on conservative thought, modern America, the threat of Sharia, and the weird, wild, wacky world of D.C., plus some heavy metal rock and roll and NFL commentary thrown in for good measure. The Christopher Manti Show, which could readily be called eponymous, Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Matt Bonner from the Crescent Project. Now, how long have you been doing this, Matt?
I've been with Crescent Project since early 2011.
Wow. Now, was that when the chapter opened up in Tennessee, or was there somebody else working it before?
Actually, we didn't have any representation here in Tennessee, and so it worked out to be a great fit, and they needed somebody to help be a representative here, and with everything that's going on here, with Islam and with ministry of trying to reach Muslims, it's a really important fit And so it's worked out wonderfully.
Now, when you, I know you're going to be here Sunday and you're bringing three or four with converts with you.
Yes.
I imagine you mix them up. There's some women, some men. But what's been, you know, what's been the biggest challenge? I mean, do you have trouble getting into churches, or is it just certain areas where you don't have a lot of exposure, or what?
That's a great question. And we are, yes, we are bringing three believers from a Muslim background on Sunday. They're all very different. They have different backgrounds and stories and testimonies, but it's a real pleasure and a thrill to hear them speak. You know, with reaching churches, it just depends. It is a challenge. I think one of the greatest challenges is just helping churches to realize the weight and the magnitude of this ministry and the importance of it. And what I mean by that is that there is so much opportunity for the church right now that's being missed. And the reason for that is there's so many Muslims who are open and willing to consider the gospel, consider reading the Bible, and yet there's just so few Christians who are out there willing to make an authentic Christian witness. And so the church is really missing a tremendous opportunity right now because Muslims right now are more open than they've ever been in the 1,400-year history of Islam. And so the challenge is just getting the church to realize that, you know, to awaken to that and to overcome fear. That's most of what I do, is to help the church overcome their fear and to inspire them to see what God's doing in the Muslim world. And so I would say that's the greatest challenge.
Okay, what fear specifically? What is it the churches are afraid of?
Well, it depends on what perspective they're coming from. For one church, it might be just fear of Islam in particular, you know, the issue just at all. And some churches just don't want to even touch it. They don't want to go near it. They don't want to talk about Islam or reaching Muslims, just for fear that it's just such a hot political issue and such a, you know, it can be a divisive issue. Or other churches are just afraid from a militant standpoint. You know, they're afraid of the militant side of Islam, and they're just afraid of trying to reach out. And so that's another, you know, fear that we see. And really just fear of just not, and really based on just misunderstanding or just not understanding that the reality of who Muslims are and really what it takes to reach them.
And now, have you, most of the places, most of the churches you have gone into, are they pretty much confined to the Nashville area, or have you been able to get into other cities?
We've actually worked with a number of different churches around. My region is quite large. It's the southeast. It's Texas to the east coast and Tennessee and Kentucky all the way south, you know, to the Gulf Coast. So I haven't actually done a whole lot of travel throughout that region yet. But so far, we've touched churches in the Middle Tennessee area and Cookeville, Murfreesboro, and some in Memphis. And we certainly hope to continue that because of this, you know, we have a lot to do here. I'm hoping to reach into areas like Bowling Green, Knoxville, you know, Chattanooga, Atlanta, Birmingham, you know, some very places that we know have populations of Muslims.
Yeah. Now, this Sunday, will that be your first event in a rural area?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I mean, it depends. I'm trying to think. Actually, I guess when it comes to, I guess it depends on how you define rural or how rural you want to get. But yeah, I guess it would be the farthest out we've gone. You know, from kind of the Middle Tennessee area, as far as being out, you know, in a county away from town. So we're looking forward to it. Really are. It's going to be a great event, and I think a lot can really happen when people see and they hear from, you know, people who've left Islam and have actually walked that journey. I think it'll be an awesome thing. So we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, believe me, you're coming to a very rural area. Okay, Stewart County in itself is rural, and Indian Mound is its own kind of rural.
Sure.
I've got to take a quick break, and then we'll get right back
sure.
to you. Got to do a live read and then a few commercials. Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
If you love America, you're among friends here. This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Matt Bonner from the Crescent Project. Matt, we've got a caller on the line. We'll go ahead and see if they've got a question or a comment.
Great.
Caller, you have a question or a comment?
Hi, Dave. Isn't this just Brenda from Women Patriots? It sounds like you're having a great show and doing spreading a great message there. So I'm just calling in to remind everybody that tomorrow on Women Patriots, you can join Barb and myself, and we'll be talking a lot about Obamacare and some other things that are in the news. But I just want to say, you know, hello to everybody, and be sure and tune in tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Great. Thank you much. And you'll get some calls on that, I'm sure.
Well, we'll look forward to them. So, all right, thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, Matt. Do you think that another one of the problems that we have is in terms of, you mentioned it earlier in reference to people being afraid to touch it because it's controversial or some of the political things. Do you think people realize how big of an issue it really is in Tennessee? I mean, a lot of people don't imagine Tennessee. I mean, we're not New York. We're not one of these big states that has a huge Muslim population, but we have a pretty large one for a state our size. And
right.
I'm not sure
right.
that everybody outside of Nashville and some of the bigger cities really knows how many we have and some of the problems we've had.
No, they don't, Dave, and that's a concern, certainly. And I think that if they did know how critical Tennessee is to this issue, I think they would be a lot more willing to kind of tune in and learn about what's going on. It is a great battleground, and there's a great spiritual battle happening right here in Middle Tennessee, and it's just amazing to see what's converging here, whether it's a mosque, you know, the large mosque going in Murfreesboro, whether it's some of the things that have happened here with some of the teachings that have been found out. We've got a high concentration of Muslim Brotherhood operatives here in Middle Tennessee. We know that. Yeah. And, I mean, it's just we have that. We have a number of mosques that are connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. We've got a number of – we have at least one imam, if not more, straight from Al-Azhar University, which is really the brain trust. Yeah, it's really the brain trust of Islam. And so these are the best of the best. These are the guys who are sent out all around the world to propagate Islam, and we've got at least one of those guys here. And so it's a central battle, and I think I've heard some say that, like Bill Warner and some of the local experts say that, the Muslim Brotherhood has chosen Middle Tennessee as really kind of the battleground zero, because if they can take Tennessee, they can literally take the rest of the United States because it's considered the buckle of the Bible Belt, and that's their attitude. And I think that if people realize what's really going on, they would certainly wake up, and realize that something's, So
yeah, and you have the village here in Stewart County, which is Jamaat al-Fukra, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's Muslims of America Village here. And I've been here for about 13 years, and I've talked to people, and some people, they're such nice people, and they're just like us. They just leave a little, and people don't realize, they don't understand. And I'm just curious. Obviously, the main focus of your ministry is the spiritual aspect. These people were lost, and as Muslims, they were lost, just as people who don't know Christ are lost.
Yes.
Do they? How much information do they give the people on what it's really like living in Islam? Or they just talk about, hey, their witness of I didn't know Christ, now I do. How much do they get into basically the evils of Islam?
Oh, are you talking about the folks who will be coming on Sunday?
Yes.
Yeah. They're certainly willing to go into that, and they can, especially, we'll have time for Q&A, and they're certainly not afraid to just, share the truth about what it's like and how brutal it is and how brutal it can be, especially for a woman. They're not afraid to talk about that, and they will, but I think that I think what mostly powers them is just sharing, the amazing way that God touched them and revealed himself to them, and how they were transformed by the power of the gospel. And I think that'll be, the driving part of their message. But, they'll certainly talk about that, and not a one of them is afraid to go into any of that, and, they can and they will. What's interesting, Dave, is that most Muslims have never really delved into the doctrine and history, and to learn really about Muhammad. So many of them are, and I'm saying this in a nice way, I'm not saying this in an offensive way, but so many of them are really ignorant about their own doctrine and past and history. And so it's interesting that, many of them are not even aware of the background and what makes it so dark, and they're more cultural in nature.
Right.
So that's just an interesting aspect of it.
Yeah, and, I was deployed twice, and I can tell you that, although I didn't trust anybody over there, that's just kind of my nature, especially in that scenario. But, the truth is, if all of them were doctrinaire, we couldn't have gotten any cooperation at all.
Right.
It was bad enough because you can't, because of their practice of taqiyya, they can, obviously we were lied to a lot of times, but I do agree, a lot of them, it's more a cultural thing to a lot of them. But,
yes.
Like I say, because they can lie to you since you're a non-Muslim, you really don't know how to take them. But I've been reading about, in general, and matter of fact, it's in your flyer as well, about the number of Muslims throughout the world who have come to know Christ. And you're hearing about miracles over in the Middle East, visions mm-hmm. and whatnot. Happening in those kind of countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really one of the most amazing phenomenons of our time right now. I really think, after being deeply invested in this issue for years now, I can tell you that I really feel that this is really one of the greatest stories of our time. And the saddest part about it is that the media is totally missing it. I mean, when you've got radical imams, when you've got sometimes in cases, some cases entire mosques coming to faith in Christ, when you've got former jihadists laying down their guns and following Jesus, it's just amazing. And when Jesus himself is going after Muslims and he's calling them out of Islam in their dreams and sending them visions, this is a well-documented phenomenon all around the world. It is just amazing, and it's truly inspiring for the church. And that's what's so sad, Dave, is that so many of them are missing this. They're not even aware of what's going on. And it's an opportunity that we just can't miss as a church. We've got to join God in this, and He's looking for us to join Him in this. And it's just, it's truly amazing. I could go on and on about it.
Well, you know what? We'll let you come back another time, and we'll give you more time, and you can go on more. But I'm looking forward to Sunday, looking forward to actually meeting you, and I appreciate you coming out here, and I appreciate you coming on the show. That's all the time we have for the night. Thank you again, and we'll see you soon. You've been listening to Inside Tennessee, Conservative Nation Media. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.